victory. Thank you for tuning in to Gospel Hour. Yes, television comes to radio right here on WKMB 1070 AM on your dial, Harvest Radio. All righty. We're going to move along. And again, we're happy to have Brother Joe Epps with us. And Brother Joe Epps, he has introduced me to a friend of his. And this is someone that I think that you need to call everyone and inform them, especially if they have children. They need to listen to this. This is a very, very good topic, and it's going to be very inspirational, helpful to help us raise our children, help us to do the things we need to do to be parents, and to move our young folks along, especially educational wise. We need to move them along. So, Brother Joe, you can reintroduce our guest, and he's all yours. And a little bit, he belonged to me too.
Thank you, Dr. Lewis. Once more and again, I'd like to not just consider Reverend King a friend, but he's also a colleague and definitely a man of God. My good fortune is in having met him and had the time and the opportunity to discuss his program. It's more than just a program. What it does is it encompasses many facets of our young people that, as I'm sure as you listen to him, you'll find both interesting, appealing, and necessary. So with that, let us begin. Reverend King, so everyone knows, you are the founder and CEO of You Are Fertile Ground. Could you just briefly tell us what exactly is You Are Fertile Ground?
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank Dr. Lewis for the opportunity to be able to share on his program this afternoon, and for the opportunity to be able to address his listeners in this way. I also want to thank God for you, Joe, also for your participation in this broadcast as well as in this undertaking. You Are Fertile Ground sprang out of an idea or a concern that I had from working and watching inside of the different schools that I was privileged to be able to involve myself with, and seeing exactly some of the issues and concerns and the plight of our youth today. A lot of times when we look at our young people, we have a tendency to just condemn them for their behavior, condemn them for their actions and for their appearance and their language. And I took a position that one day I sat at night and thinking about it, and I realized that they are living in the world that we gave them. And we as a society have become so permissive in how we deal with our young people, much different than we were when we grew up, that not only did we have the family unit that protected us and fenced us in and made sure that we didn't hear and see things that would be adverse to our growth and our development, but society as a whole protected us and made sure that things that were not suitable were not allowed to be put on the radio and were not allowed to be put shown on the television and in groups that did not have a positive, you know, message to the public. We're not allowed to even perform in certain cities. And today we have evolved into a society that we pretty much, we permit everything.
Well, with that understanding, what is Fertile Ground focused on?
Okay, Fertile Ground's focus is just in the name You Are Fertile Ground, LLC. You Are, the letters You Are stand for understanding and responsibility. We as well as our young people must understand that where you are and where you're going. And the R is taking responsibility for getting there. The fertile ground concept is that we are all fertile ground, and our young people are such a rich resource of fertile ground out of which anything will grow, good and bad. And because it's fertile ground, we must police it, we must fence it, we must nurture it, watch over it, to make sure that not only do we plant the right things in it, but we make sure that the wrong things don't grow there. Because weeds do not need our help. They just simply need neglect. And if we don't look over the fertile ground, anything will grow, and it will be something we don't want. So the name You Are Fertile Ground is just that. It's basically a constant reminder to the young people as well as to the world that we are fertile ground, and we must make sure that positiveness is the only thing that we allow into our rich medium.
Very good. With all that you have put into developing and refining the program, one of the things that that I noticed was your focus on youth, and you also have a professional aspect to your program. Can you just give us a little more information about the Me First Youth Initiative?
Okay. The Me First Youth Initiative sprang out of a feeling that I had and watching how we're dealing with our educational system and the fact that we have such this cliche word that has sprang up that we hear bounced about called the achievement gap.
Right.
And dealing with how that compares from one school to another, from one district to another, from one community to another. And we constantly talk about closing the achievement gap. But we continue to try and close the achievement gap using some form of the same method. And that method is constantly an academically based method, which means constantly pushing more and more academics, trying to get the children to raise their test scores and raise their achievement levels in school just by pushing and pushing academics without any concern for the social condition of our children and where they're coming from. And I always use the analogy of how do you get a child, how do you force a child to eat green peas? And the answer is you can't. Once they close up, that's it. You have to some kind of way encourage them and get them to understand why it's good and then reward them with something that they like as a reinforcement to doing what you felt like was best for them. So the Me First Initiative comes out of we need to find a method that says you cannot use conventional methods in an unconventional subject. And our children are very unconventional as compared to the way we came up because society has groomed them to be this totally different being. So the Me First Initiative is designed to do just that.
And exactly how is your approach put forth?
Okay. The Me First Initiative is the name itself. Came about from riding on a plane one day, and I was listening to, before we took off, I was listening to the flight attendants do the pre-flight instructions, and there was a part of it that stuck out to me because I hear it all the time, and it was when they said, should there be a sudden depressurization of the cabin, oxygen masks would deploy from the ceiling. Please secure your mask over your face. Oxygen will begin to flow, though the bag doesn't inflate. Be sure to secure your mask before you attempt to help anyone who may be traveling with you. And I said, "What? That's a me first concept. I've got to make sure that I have me together before I even attempt or am able to help anyone else." So the Me First Initiative comes out of a need for behavior modification. These are some of the things that we deal with in the program. Behavior modification, interpersonal social skills, people skills, understanding differences, developing tolerance, goal orientation. That's an area that needs to be dealt with because so many of our schools do not have a goal orientation for our students. Our students are focused, we focus our children on graduating from high school as a goal. And I try to get so many teachers that I even speak with, either in the schools or individual basis, we've got to stop selling our children on graduation as a goal. It's a part of a process, and that process is towards a goal which we haven't fostered in our children, that they should have a goal in their life as to what they are working towards other than just getting a diploma. You know, so that in the last area after goal orientation is most importantly image reconstruction, because we need to make sure that our children are fostering good, sound, healthy self-images of themselves, and so much of society, so much of their environment so much of the conditions that they come out of and the environment and peers that they involve themselves with have caused them to have a self-image that is not conducive to a positive outcome.
And how do you bring about those changes in your program?
In those changes, we have classes where we sit down with individuals and we discuss, first of all, what is the image that you see? How do you see yourself? It's with one of the modules is called Who Am I? Who am I? And then they actually will sit down and write who that person is that they see. How do you see? I'm not going to help you with that. You write down who you see yourself as and where do you see yourself going. And sometimes you'll almost break down in tears when you see what some of these kids write as to how they see themselves. And that's why I say that they're only living in the world that we've given them, and they should have a better outlook on themselves than they have, and that's because we have left the wheel. Our society has been so focused on economic growth and personal achievements that we've gone to work every single day and we left our children alone.
What are some of the writings from our young people, how they see themselves?
Some of the things I asked young lady, so I looked at her paperwork as to how you see yourself, and she saw herself as she had no desire to be in school, and her main focus at 14 years old was she needed a job. And when I asked her, when she wrote that, you know, I stopped and I said, what do you need a job for? She said, so I can buy all the things I want to wear. And she had no idea, no focus on education at all. I had one young lady who wrote, and I said, how do you see yourself? And she said, my goal is to try and be a better parent than my mom. Mm-hmm. I said, why do you say that? She said, because I need more nurturing. Mm-hmm. And there are so many hurtful things that they see themselves, and they have a desire. What do you see yourself being?
And one of the things I do, I want to interject that because I just wanted to really explore that for a moment. What do young men say about themselves? And I'm very interested, and I'm sure many of us are interested, to know what young men see themselves as.
Well, when so many of them, you know, I had a young man who said his goal was he just wanted to get out, graduate, because he was just tired of school. Hmm. He was tired. He had done enough school. 12 years of school was enough for him. And he had no goals, no idea of what he wanted to do. He just wanted to get out of school. Mm-hmm. Then I have some young men that when you look at, you ask them exactly what is your goal, they just shrug their shoulders because it's a foreign question to them as to where you see yourself.
I can understand.
10 or 15 years from now. They have no vision to see past today. They can't even tell you where they see themselves tomorrow. They have no real expectations of their behavior or their achievements, their accomplishments, what they want to do, even next week, to less known to think in terms of where they see themselves 5 years from now. If you ask them, do you see yourselves themselves in college, some of them only find out that they want to go to college once they get to the 12th grade and they realize that they didn't maybe do as bad as they thought. So maybe I'll go to college, but they don't even have what do you want to do with the college degree? I have no idea. And then you have those that are really hurt your feelings when you ask them, where do you see yourself 10 years from now? And they'll say, well, I may not even be here 10 years from now. You know, what I'm trying to do right now is my focus every single day is I'm just trying to get paid.
Well, in light of that, since your focus is non-academic, how do you measure results?
Measure results by, first of all, indoctrinating them the reason why they need to change. Because, you know, change is a very important thing for the country and for the world, because change is the only constant, and it's something that all of us need to be doing. We think our children need to change, but everybody needs to change. Everybody, we got people who are right now, you know, out there that are so resistant to change, and the only thing about change they can embrace is if somebody else does it. You know, but I try and get them to, first of all, understand why they need to change, and then determine where the areas are that they need to change. And then through the process of working with them on a week-to-week basis, through writings, through questions, where thought-provoking questions, critical thinking, where they can now sit down and write down what their feelings are today. And as we move through the program, they are then reevaluated, and then the same questions come up again, and you can see the growth process as now, once the mind has been expanded, it never returns to its original size and shape. So once that individual has new information in their head, you begin to see it exemplified in what they write. You begin to see it exemplified in what they say when you give them, you know, oral presentations that they have to do. When you see it in their behavioral changes, and you begin to see, I worked with one particular school where after 4 weeks of working with 15 young men and young women on a pilot program, the school had been trying to get the boys to pull their pants up all year long. In 4 weeks' time, the young men who were working with me pulled their pants up. You know, they took their hats off. They started policing each other. They would walk down the hall and take another young man's hat off his head and hand it to him and said, no hats in the building. You know, the young ladies, would they changed their dress code to where they weren't wearing revealing clothes because they began to understand the value of respecting themselves and this respect that they seem to want from the world. And our kids are even exemplify such violence when people, they say, well, people disrespect me. And the reason why they feel such disrespect from others is because they have very little self-respect. And if you don't have self-respect, then you make the responsibility other people's responsibility to give you that respect, and you don't even know what it looks like. So when they don't give it to you the way you think it should be, you react in a violent way.
Well, you're talking about a lot of moral and social concerns. What then are the core concepts? Because it sounds like respect, self-discipline, or am I on the right track, or could you help us in that respect?
Yeah, the core concepts are things like, you know, you've got to have a sense of responsibility, first of all, because we have so many kids who don't even have a concept of time. No concept of time. They don't wear watches. They have someone else. Some of them are still there. They're 15, 16 years old, and they're still depending on someone else to tell them what time they have to be at school. So what time to wake them up in the morning, because they have no concept of it. I have a young lady who's she was late to school every single day. And when I ask her, what are you going to do when you get ready to go get a job? You're going to be late every day. You're going to stop, then I'll change. And she has no concept of the power of habits. And the easiest thing to do is what you've always done. And you're going to try to knee-jerk your way into this change, and you're going to lose your job at a time when you need to make a house payment, or you need to make a car payment, or you just had a baby. You're going to lose your job because you weren't able to change something that you've done ever since you were in the 7th, 8th, or 9th grade. You know, so responsibility is important. Self-respect, first of all, and then respect of others. You know, you need to understand things like coachability. Coachability just means the ability to listen to someone else who has your best interest at heart and be able to understand when that person has your best interest at heart. Then you also need to be dependable. You know, which dependability is the fact that when you're supposed to be somewhere, that everyone else in the world can depend on you being there. And they don't understand dependability. Then the most important thing that has our kids in a lot of trouble in our school systems is accountability. Not only are they not doing what they should be doing, and they sometimes don't know it, but they don't even know how to be held accountable to that. They don't want other people to tell them where they're wrong, and they just don't have an understanding of that. So once they foster that and understand the need to be held accountable, then they understand that champ. Now they go from the point of being a champion, where once you become a champion, champions want to be held accountable because they know the foundation of their growth, the foundation of them being the best they can be, is somebody mirroring them, because they know they can't see everything that they're doing wrong, everything that they're doing that's not up to their capabilities, and they need someone else to look at them and say, you could have done this better this way, you could have been better had you done this, maybe if you stopped doing this. And they know that in their that accountability lies their ability to be the best that they can be.
My question to you, Ron, was, how do you incorporate the parents in this? Is there pre-training for those who don't know, or you just hands-on, learn as you go?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And when I ran for the school board earlier this year in Patterson, a lot of my my colleagues at that time, their platform was that the answer to the achievement gap in our school system is an increasing parental involvement in the schools. And I agree that it plays a part. But
a major part, I would think.
Yes, it plays a major part. But at the same time, to me, the flip side of that coin is, as I understand, I pay close attention and study the difference in our social existence today in dealing with that question. And understanding that this is 2009, and this is not that 1979 Chevy that you bought when you just graduated from college as a school teacher or a parent or whatever you were at that time. This is a 2009 Lamborghini, the kids today. And you're not going to drive this vehicle unless you really understand and read the manual. And these kids have a very intricate manual in understanding how to operate with them. And so I dealt with the parental issue from the question dealing with the fact, first of all, that this is not Ozzie and Harriet. This is not Leave It to Beaver. You know, this is not, you know, the Cosbys. Uh-huh. This is not Father Knows Best. Uh-huh. You know, today this is a whole different dynamic, particularly in the African-American community, when you talk in terms of the family component, the family dynamic, the family structure is very different now. So you have, you know, you have parents where you have families where you have two parents, you know, in the African-American community. But you also have so many of our families who have been headed up by very strong African-American women who have held down the job of taking care of a family for many years in our communities. Then you've got, you know, grandparents, you know, who are in their second term. Some of them great-grandparents in their third term of raising children in their late 70s and 80s. And then we have a lot of teen parents who there's only maybe 10 or 12 years between them and the age of their children. So you can't use the same idea about parenting. You have to study and determine what's the best way. And when you talk in terms of the parents, teachers, and students have to work together. And dealing with parents, I would like to even offer, and I have done through the PTOs, is I found that in doing counseling for families with their children.
Explain what a PTO for.
Okay, that's the parent-teaching organizations, or what we used to call it was the PTA.
Right.
You know, a lot of them call it PTOs now, which is the parent-teachers organization, where they come together and deal with the issues of the school and how the child is dealing with the education. But a lot of parents can't even make it to PTO meetings. You know, and the question that I dealt with in running for school board was if parental involvement is a major key in the educational achievements of our children, then the question I ask is, what if they don't come? Yeah. What if they don't show up to the parent? If we hang our hat on the child's achievements and accomplishments in school every day, depends upon that parent showing up at school for parent-teachers conferences and as well as back-to-school night. If the parent doesn't come, what do we do if they don't come? You know, and for me, the answer is we've got to try to straddle the fence and say, well, we have to bring back a little of what teaching the school system used to be, because the school system now says, well, we don't want to be counselors, we don't want to be parents, I just want to teach. But see, when I went to school, you know, I asked the question, even when I spoke with a group of teachers, what happened to the apple? Because when I was in school, I remember, you know, shining up an apple at night, asking my mother, could I bring this apple to my teacher in the fourth grade? Because that teacher was somebody so special to me, and I knew every day that she cared about me, not just my education, but she cared about whether or not how I crossed the street and make sure how I walked to school. And there was a love and a concern that the teacher had for my life. But, as well as my education.
But you've mentioned that there's a new dynamic, and that has affected and to some extent certainly abbreviated the ability of teachers to interact beyond a certain degree with the children in the class. So how much involvement do you try to bring about with the parents during the program, at the end of the program, or at some point to make them aware of the progress or the need for involvement?
Well, what the intention is to be able to have meetings with the PTOs, and also to have the PTOs set up time periods where parents can come in and even deal with the whole parenting issue. Because okay. I found that so many parents, and with all due respect to parents, I don't want any parents thinking that I'm saying they don't know what they're doing. But when you sit down, I've done counseling, and there are things that I've found in dealing with parents and their children that when it comes to understanding discipline and the consistency of making sure that the desired effect is exactly what you get from the child, a lot of parents don't understand that. And so sometimes the parents will, you can see them where they'll sabotage their own expectations because of not understanding the whole parental idea and understanding something called currency, because of diet. Back in the day, your mother would smack you in the store. My mother had a rule that that she would get with us wherever we acted up at. It wasn't like, well, wait till you get home. It was right here in the middle of the aisle. Okay, right now you can't do that. So we try and make sure that they understand even currency. So sometimes it's understanding what the child's currency is. What do they operate? Do they operate under their thing, the cell phone? Is it the Xbox? Is it the Wii? Is it the computer? And whatever that is, that becomes the leverage that you can use to be able to get this child to understand what you want them to do, whether it be in their behavior, whether it be in their school. But we have kids who are act up in school and they do everything that they shouldn't do, yet they can still come home and get on the Xbox. They can still come home and get on the computer. They can still go down and hang out with their friends.
Is that what you mean by parents sabotaging the behavior that they're trying to enforce?
Exactly. They think that they should be able to talk to the child and get them to be able to understand. You can't reason with an unreasonable subject. Children are unreasonable, and you can't reason with them. You can only make them see through understanding what their currency is.
Excuse me just a moment, gentlemen. I hate to interrupt this wonderful conversation, but we have a call, and we need to do that right now. Victory, caller, you are?
I am Christopher Sherrod.
Okay, Brother Christopher Sherrod, is that correct?
Yes.
All righty, and you're with the group called Christopher, right?
Yes, I am.
All righty, and this wonderful CD, CD, from the old school, I'm getting ready to say record. Record in a minute.
Yeah, they don't even make those no more.
No, they don't. I still have some.
Yeah, I got some too. It's a shame they don't make them no more because it makes my whole phonograph go to waste.
Yes, and Bob came to my house and he saw my phonograph, the one that you have to crank up. And the only thing, we didn't have the spotted black and white dog sitting in front of it, the Victrola, right. It was called.
Yeah, I just remember the kind you got to sit the nickel on there to keep the needle on the record.
That's right. Keep it steady. Put a little weight on it.
Right.
Well, my friend, share with us about this project, the purpose of it, and your hopes and dreams that this project will travel where and do what?
Well, the project is Christopher the Journey. Our first single was a song by the name of Yes. The project is really a chronicle. It chronicles our, journey through Christendom. We are three members. All three of our names are Christopher.
Yes.
We met each other in college back in the mid.
Give me the last names of the other two.
My name is Christopher Surratt. There's Christopher Reed and Christopher McNeil. Now, we're all from the Ohio area.
Okay.
And we went to school in the Dayton, Ohio area.
Mm-hmm.
And the album itself just chronicles our, you know, Christian journey from, you know, college, dealing with the things that college kids deal with, and on through adulthood, because now we're two of us are married with children and this, that, and the third. So we're, you know, it really was a long time coming. So we decided to make this album kind of about us and what we have went through trying to get this record out.
So it's more of a testimonial kind of production.
Exactly.
Yes. Where was this production done?
The production was done in Dayton, Ohio. We're all producers. We all write and we all play instruments. So I own a studio personally. So we, you know, just got in my basement and did the project. And fortunately, we had a few label executives that wanted to put the record out. We teamed up with a couple of people, and we got the single on the radio, and they were spinning it hard, and people seemed to enjoy it. We got a lot of feedback on the record, positive feedback.
Now, are you doing independent?
Yeah, we are independent distributors. We own our own label.
Right, good. Now, how does that work for you, opposed to those other individuals that are letting other executive producers promote their music?
Ask the question again, please.
How does it work for you, being independent, doing it yourself, opposed to having other record producers promote your music?
Well, it's just it takes a lot more money, if you will.
True.
You have to pay out a lot more money, so you get a bigger cut on the back end also, you know, from
you
a financial standpoint. And we have control over our product.
Mm-hmm.
That means a person doesn't, a label executive doesn't like the song on a record, and they have the power to take the song off, then the artist is kind of, you know, without any say. So we don't run into those problems because we own and operate our own record company, and we kind of like call the shots. And it's like, you know, wherever God leads us to go, that's where we're able to go, and that's where we're able to put out to the people.
Share with us some of the performers that you've worked with, some of the noted performers, if there be any.
Oh my goodness, from Kirk Franklin to Fred Hammond. We've worked with Marvin Sapp. We're currently in the studio with Eric Dawkins of Dawkins & Dawkins.
Yes.
It's a host of people. The Gospel Gangsters was a rap group that kind of...
Gospel song. Gangsters?
Yeah, it's a gospel rap group.
I don't think I want to see them.
From L.A., from Los Angeles. They actually...
I know I don't want to see them if they're from there.
And they're actually good guys. They are really...
I'm sure they are.
They are really... they came out of the gang scene, and God really has done a miraculous thing in their lives, and they're doing everything they do now for the glory of God. So, you know, we've worked with them, and we work with a whole bunch of people. You know, if I sit up here... Dr. Bobby Jones, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Majors, of course.
Well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever been to the Jersey area?
We've never been to New Jersey, now.
Never been to New Jersey?
Would love to come.
All right. Sound like something to me, right?
Yeah. Would love to come. Never been to Jersey, though.
Well, listen, we have to make that happen. Certainly would love to bring you to Jersey so we can be able to televise you here as well and introduce you to this area.
Exactly. We would love to come.
Okay. I have your information. I'm going to be in touch with you so we can set something up to bring you guys. Now, I know that your music's basically contemporary, correct?
Very contemporary gospel music. Yeah.
All right. Now, let me just ask you this question, because, you know, I'm living through three generations of music genre here. Is there anything that I could enjoy as a traditional sound?
Oh, definitely. I mean, though our sound is contemporary, we were reared around good old-fashioned gospel music from Rance Allen to the Soul Stirrers.
Okay.
So all of those people influence the music we have done. We have a song on the record called "Won't Stop Praising," which is really a traditional quartet song. We have so the album itself goes from contemporary to quartet to praise and worship. We have something on the record for everyone.
Well, that sounds good, because certainly if we bring you this way and bring you into our backyard, we are going to request that you would give us a mixture, because we have yet seniors that certainly love the traditional side, because of our young people who would love the contemporary side. So we want to make everybody happy.
And that's exactly why we did the record the way we did it.
Well, listen, I am very appreciative of you calling. I know that you've been trying to call last week. You were trying to get through and you were unable to, and you were having a little trouble trying to get through today. But I'm glad that we had the opportunity to make this happen. And I certainly would love to bring you here, and I'm going to look towards doing something maybe around Christmas time, if possible. If not, well, since you're in Ohio, you're not really that that far, you know.
No, not at all.
From where we are here in Jersey. If not, then we'll certainly do something in the early spring. But I'm going to definitely bring you this way. We want to hear you. We want to televise you and push what you do out to the nation and beyond this country.
Okay, and we definitely appreciate you taking your time out of your busy day to speak with us. We want to let all the people in Jersey know that if they wanted to reach us, they can reach us at info@christophermusic.com, or they can go to myspace.com/spiritualrealsoul, and they can reach us there. We have a very heavy presence on the Internet, so if you typed in Christopher Gospel Music, somewhere around there will pop up.
All right. Well, I thank you again, and give Christopher and Christopher my best.
I sure will, and I appreciate you. Thanks.
Thank you. Have a victorious day. Pastor Clarence Thomas and the Pilgrim Baptist Church presents a fall gospel concert featuring, from Chicago, Illinois, the famous Christland Singers. This is going to be held on Sunday, October the 11th at 3:30 p.m. at the Pilgrim Baptist Church, 34 Hudson Street in the city of Newark, the gospel music capital. So come out and be blessed, and they're only asking for a free will offering. Again, this is going to take place on Sunday, October the 11th at 3 p.m. at the Pilgrim Baptist Church, 34 Hudson Street in the city of Newark. This is a fall gospel concert featuring, from Chicago, Illinois, the famed Christland Singers. Deacon Green, thank you for the information, and I plan to, it's my plan to be in attendance on that day with you. Now, you have to do me a favor, Deacon, because I might get there a little late, and you told me that you was going to feed me, so I just want you to put a plate aside, just wrap it up twice in aluminum foil. Chicken and collard greens and black-eyed peas, potato salad, and some yams. You know, that will do just fine. It will do just fine. So you do that for me, and I will make sure that you have a ringside seat in the kingdom. I better yet, I'll let you sit right next to Bob. Alrighty. Victory in Jesus, the World Gospel Musical Association, celebrates 41 years of convention and workshop ministry. And this is going to take place on Saturday, October the 3rd. And you don't want to miss this workshop. And it's a variety of unique individuals that are coming in to teach in worship and praise dancing, effective singing, senior workshop. We have a senior workshop. Bob, come on, get into the senior workshop. They'll show you how to do whatever it is that you need to learn. Christian poetry, choir decorum, musical instruments, and the list goes on with so many other great, great. Christian karate. Brother Mike Morris is going to be teaching kids how to do karate, and he's going to even teach a few of the adults how to do karate. So you don't want to miss that. Joining us will be at the 2 o'clock hour, Lady Gwen Moulton, Recreation Cultural Affairs Supervisor from the City of Newark. She's going to be instructing the Ministry of Music, and in parenthesis, that's music ministry. And joining us at 3 o'clock is going to be none other than Professor Gregory Hopkins, the Minister of Music of the Convent Avenue Baptist Church. And his topic for his workshop is going to be the right song for the right message. Now, workshop information, you can contact 973-371-7539 or 973-705-3151. Or you can visit us at www.wgma.u. S, that's like in United States. Again, www.wgma.us, and you'll find all of the information there. In the few remaining minutes, certainly I want Reverend Ron King to just say a few words to parents wherein or persons of interest that would like to contact him and be able to speak with him directly, or invite him to your church, to your workshop, or sessions.
Well, it's surely been a pleasure being here with you, and thank you so much. And for the parents, you know, we have such a tremendous job of securing our future, and the children are our future. You know, I'd say to people who are not concerned about the future because they don't plan to live there, you know, I say, well, if you're not concerned about the future, you're not worthy of living in the present, because there are so many people who sacrificed everything they had to make sure that we have what we have and know what we know and can do what we do today. So this undertaking is a heartfelt undertaking. It comes from a tremendous amount of love and concern for our children, because they are ours. And so for parents, we need to do our part. It is a threefold process of parents, teachers, and students coming together to make sure that the students understand. I always say they're betting their life on us that we get it right, that we show them the error of their ways, because they don't know. And once they reach an age where they understand it, they will look back and either give us the credit for helping them to see the right way, or blame us for not doing our due diligence to make them see where they're going the wrong way. So we have to come together as parents. We have to come together as the teachers. Thus, so in order to reach me, you can reach me at, right now the website is being constructed for UR Fertile Ground and the Me First program, but in the meantime, you can reach me at this cell number, 201-522-0041. 201-522-0041. You can also reach us at 877-889-4210. That's a toll-free number, 877-889-4210. Or please send us an email at rdkingtut, T-U-T, rdkingtut at aol.com. Please send an email out, as just so that we can let us know what you feel about the program, what you feel about involvement in helping us to move this thing forward. And also that once the website comes up, we can actually send you back a blast and let you know where to find it. So rdkingtut at aol.com. Be looking forward to hearing from every single one of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, Brother Joe Epps. I've been your host, Dr. Albert Lewis. And remember, victory is in Jesus.